In the name of God, the Holy and the Divine Trinity. On Friday, I was the worship leader for the Baldwinsville Ecumenical Lenten Noon Worship and Lunch down at the Baldwinsville United Methodist Church. And by the way, thanks for you to Joy Oakley for arranging the invitation to participate and also for gathering volunteers to prepare the meal. While I was waiting for the service to begin, I noticed the decoration in their chapel down there. The chapel, if you haven't been there, is a room kind of like a conference room. It's rectangular, has those stackable chairs, a piano, a regular height acoustic, I think it's acoustical tile ceiling. It's got a step up at the end and a couple of stained glass windows. It looks like it might have been retrofitted or remodeled into a chapel from some older original purpose. But the retrofit, if that's what it is very nicely done. For instance, the doors from the hallway into the room have got leaded glass, and in the center of each is inset a piece of what appears to be very old Victorian painted glass. It depicts Jesus variously as a good shepherd, or, you know, all surrounded by sheep, or as a prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, or some other scene like that. And the first thing I notice about these windows is Jesus is very, very Caucasian. And the landscapes look very English, or maybe upstate New York, not like the Middle East. You know, it makes me wonder about our images of Jesus and our images of God. Our gospel reading today has Jesus speaking to Jerusalem. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings? And you were not willing. Now, this isn't the only time in Scripture that we have a clearly feminine image of God as mother. For instance, in Isaiah, God is described as in labor with and as breastfeeding God's people. It's metaphor, but pretty much all of our images of and about God are metaphor. God is a rock. Jesus is a shepherd, even raising people up on eagle's wings. So since we happily wallow in metaphor, simile, and other symbolic language in our scripture, in our worship language, our liturgy, and especially in our hymns, how come we can get quite so fussed or uncomfortable about language we would use to refer to God, especially if it happens to be feminine language, for example? Somewhere in my files, I have a Eucharistic prayer that was proposed for the 1979 Book of Common Prayer, but it failed to make the final cut to make it into the book. With permission from the bishop, I used it on Epiphany time. It's perfectly orthodox in content, but I think the reason it didn't make the cut for the Book of Common Prayer is that in the early to mid-70s, when these things were used for trial use, it was too edgy. The beginning of the prayer draws from Old Testament texts about holy wisdom, and true to the source, the pronoun used is she. One references to how holy wisdom was present and danced at the creation of the world. Note, as we later assert in the Creed, Jesus Christ was begotten of the Father before all worlds. This Eucharistic prayer describes holy wisdom in the first part of the prayer, where we usually recall salvation history, how she was active in the world at God's command. Then the prayer shifts to describing the incarnation of God in Jesus Christ, with no change of subject, but a change of pronoun. It becomes he. This kind of gender-bending language can disturb us. And certainly in the 70s, it would have been difficult for some folks to accept at all. And even now, it still might get your attention. Why is it so difficult for us to see God, Christ's present creation, before the birth of the man Jesus? Well, one reason is that there are only 93 women who speak in the Bible at all. Only 49 of them have names. These women speak roughly 1.1% of the words. Mary, the mother of Jesus, speaks 191 words. Mary Magdalene gets 61. And Sarah gets 141. culture of the time, the authorship, the difficulties of being taken seriously by neighbors. It's understandable. But you know, sometimes new and different approaches are necessary, not merely for inclusion, but to open up our hearts and minds to the way things really are. Not as it might be comfortable for us to think it is, or easy for us, or the way we've always thought about it. The fact is, God is about as much like our understanding of God as God is not like our understanding of God. Another way of saying that is God is entirely other. Not just a bigger version of us. Other. Mysterious. Inspiring awe and that little shudder of fear that comes with great awe. Our reading from Genesis gets at this. Things get very strange for Abram when God comes to call and make a covenant with him. As the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and a deep and terrifying darkness descended upon him. Strange as it might seem, this alienness, this otherness of God is actually good news for us. Means we're not responsible for running things. We're not responsible. We don't have that crushing burden of having to do and know and take care of everything. We're not excused from our part. There's still work to be done, but as I said before, God is God and I am not. Which frees me from having to enforce the rules, from having to have everything make sense, from having to be correct, from needing to have it all together. God's in charge. God's not limited like we are. God knows what we do not. In our gospel reading, Jesus says, "See, your house is left to you." Might he mean by this that we are the shapers of our identity by what we will and will not include, by how we, not God, but we, restrict or limit God into a really big version of ourselves? Our limiting of talk about God to exclude the experience, the identity as feminine, as non-European or American, as not the experience of persons of color, or the very poor, or disabled, or the down and out, or those who are very, very, very undeserving, or those who are just plain not like us. Our limiting talk of God that way sets a limit on the bounds of God's compassion, literally God's suffering with, God's edginess, solidarity with those on the edges, on the margins. It sets a limit on how we would be gathered in as a hen gathers her chicks. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. You were not willing. Our call this morning, the prayer of the day, asks that we might embrace and hold fast the unchangeable truth of your word, Jesus Christ, your Son. Perhaps we might add to that, to pray to be released from all the limits we